Good afternoon, everybody, or good evening, or good morning, depending on where you're listening from. This is Sports Betting Tips with Chris Sheridan, episode number 38, and I'm very pleased to be joined by a young lady I've been working with for 175 years, which means she's not. Thank you, Dee. Sometimes the guests don't laugh. Dee Lynam joins us. Yeah, Dee Lynam joins us. If you've been following the Sixers, you've seen Dee Lynam as a courtside reporter. You've seen her sitting courtside. You've seen her buddying up with Allen Iverson, because Allen Iverson is one of the best guys you'd ever want to buddy up with limits. And she's the son of legendary NBA coach Jim Lynam, who I have tons of stories to tell about. One of the greatest guys I've ever covered. Dee, welcome to the show, and let's get right to it. We're going to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers, the stuff that's been going on ever since the blow-up in the locker room in Portland between Coach Brett Brown and Jimmy Butler. And now everybody pretends it didn't happen, but we both know better. So why don't you fill in the listeners on kind of what happened and what kind of damage control the Sixers have been employing over the last few days?
Well, it is interesting, Chris. First of all, it was a film session, and if you know Brett Brown, and I think you do, but other people may not, he's a guy who is definitely interested in conversation, not just about basketball. He's interested in things in the world, and he'll say, "What did you think? What did you see?" So it was that kind of conversation that was happening, and Brett doesn't, he's not saying it didn't happen, and Jimmy doesn't say it didn't happen. That it was confrontational, both of them would say it was not. To them, it was a normal dialogue between the two of them. I thought the biggest thing that I took away from practice the other day was the story said that Jimmy Butler would like to be in more pick-and-roll situations than he's been used since he came here. Jimmy didn't say that was not true, but he said that was not what we were discussing. He was saying how much trouble he was having defensively because the language that Brett uses and what they do defensively to him is like a foreign language, and he has never, ever played defense the way these guys want to do it. And he's always played it one way from high school, college, and the pros up to this point. So he has really struggled with their terminology and what they want to do. And that was what he was saying, because he does think that they should be a better defensive team. Not just he started with himself, but the team should be better defensively. And that was what the discussion was really about.
And that sort of comes with the territory when you make a midseason acquisition. A guy's got to come in and oftentimes learn a new system, but learning the new lingo is also difficult as well. And Jimmy's been with Tom Thibodeau for practically his entire career.
Correct. And so I think the fact that he and Brett, because they didn't talk at the same time, Brett talked the day before, Jimmy didn't talk because he was not at the arena, and he was still suffering from whatever the flu or something that he had going on. So on the day that Brett talked, like they both had very specific details, and it was Jimmy who really talked about what the context of the defensive conversation that they had. So, and then I'm going to bring J.J. Redick into it, because J.J., who I think is, you know, pretty forthcoming, been around a lot of locker rooms and a lot of film sessions. And to him, he felt like it was just another film session. A lot of guys, you know, they could just sit there and they don't engage. JJ and Jimmy are two of the more vocal guys in that locker room. So the fact that Jimmy was saying more than another guy was not unusual to JJ.
And are these two going to be able to work it out, or is this going to become a situation, Dee, where it's not a sustainable mix between Brett Brown and Jimmy Butler?
No, I actually think they get along just fine. I think that between Joel, because he was a little unhappy earlier, about maybe, what was that, 2 weeks earlier, that I felt he was pouting about his own situation. And then you have Ben Simmons, who I think his play is really coming on. The fact that he's willing to take these jumpers now, I think he and Jimmy have a very noticeable connection on the court, and they also verbally seem like they get along in the locker room and basketball-wise. So I think it's the three of them. Like, how do you all want to fit together and realize that you need to? So, I mean, the more stars that you get, the tougher it is to coach. I think that's just obvious. But every star says they want more talent around them so that they can have a better chance of winning a championship. So this is the first time that really all three of them, any one of them in the situation, has had this kind of talent around them, and they must also individually adjust to sharing that, quote, space of being stars.
And they have time, because we're sitting here recording on January 9th. The playoffs, last time I checked, start in April. So you work things out. And as we all remember from last season, look, the Sixers were 20-20 after 40 games. They went into Wednesday night's game against Washington at 27-14 after 41 games. So at the midpoint of the season this year, we're way, way ahead of where they were last year. And we still have the trading deadline ahead of us, and we still have February free agency ahead of us. And remember, February free agency is where the Sixers got Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova last year. And there's going to be guys available, whether they're NBA guys or whether they're guys coming over from China, because the Chinese Basketball Association season ends in February. There's going to be players that are added to this mix as we move forward. And the Sixers will remain a team in flux. But let's turn to a couple other new pieces. Landry Shamet hit six threes Tuesday night against Washington on the first night of the back-to-back. And Jonah Bolden from Australia, the big guy, has supplanted Amir Johnson, a real established vet, as the backup center. Tell us a little bit about those two guys and whether you think the Sixers can have such young guys in the rotation and have the level of success in the postseason that they did last year.
Well, first of all, I'll start with Landry because I am really impressed with the kid. And obviously he got good coaching at Wichita State because I think he just looks like he's a little more seasoned than many of these rookies who are drafted as far down as he was. I mean, he was a late first rounder. So I think they were a little surprised at how well he played early, and that he has been able to sustain his three-point shooting is remarkable. But it's not an accident that every time I walk in that gym, he's about, you know, 2 feet separated from J.J. Redick, and that they go through so much, not just the shooting stuff that J.J. does, but really the routine of J.J.'s entire day, whether it's a game day or a practice day. And I think that has been really, really beneficial for Shamet. Now, do you like going into a postseason having to rely on a rookie who hasn't been there when we all know defenses definitely step it up a notch? Probably not, but that's probably what these guys are going to have to do. So I think the kid is sharp, and he has such a quick release. And, you know, so often the really good three-point shooters, that is the thing. He doesn't bring he catches and it's already in position to let it fly. So I think Landry's been a great, great find for them to get him where they drafted him. And actually it was Coach Jim O'Brien who, when they were going through people last year before the draft, who, like, when he saw him, he was the one who said to that staff, you know, you need to take a second look at this guy because of how quickly he releases the ball. And to him it seemed like an NBA skill that not everybody brought to the table. When it comes to Jonah Bolden, I'll have to be honest with you, Chris. 2 summers ago, I thought he was fantastic in the summer league. And then he was a little disappointing this past summer. And early on, I got to see him down in the G League a couple of games. And then all of a sudden you had a couple injuries, whether it was when Wilson was out, Mescala missed a game here or there. And then you had a play. And when he played, again, similar to Landry, took advantage of the opportunity. I'm a big Amir fan as a person, but I do think Jonah is much more athletic, and I think he has like a good energy. And the other thing is he's learned very quickly is spacing. He understands where he should and shouldn't be depending on who's coming to the paint, be it Ben Simmons or be it a Joel Embiid, because the two of them want to be in the paint, but do it differently. And you must quickly learn if you were that, you know, the four of where you're going to be when those two guys have the ball in their hands.
Yeah, it's interesting to see him supplant a guy like Amir Johnson, who's, you know, but between Amir Johnson and Rashawn Holmes playing behind Joel Embiid last year, they had a real nice three-headed center. And Amir is sitting there, and they're not going to get rid of him, and he'll probably play a role in the playoffs, but for
correct
him to be put on the shelf is kind of interesting. Dee, the Philadelphia 76ers have the best home record in the Eastern Conference at 18-3, but they're 9-11 on the road. They also lead the Eastern Conference. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I feel like I've been saying this for a while on the different, you know, obviously shows I have to do, that is where the true growth must come from these guys. And because if you look, the teams that are in the playoffs, like right now, I know it's January and early January, but they're all better road teams than this group is. And so you have got to learn to win in other people's buildings. Otherwise, it's going to be all for naught. I mean, yes, you're going to have home court for sure in the first round, probably in the second round, but you're going to have to be able to win on the road.
Yeah, and that, especially when you're involving so many young players and then new players into the mix, that's a learning process. And again, what you look like in January and what you look like in April are two different things. And last year, the Sixers closed the season with 16 straight victories. They went into the playoffs with a head of steam, and but when Joel Embiid came back from the fractured cheekbone, they kind of lost something that they had going when Joel was on the shelf. It was weird, and then they in the series against Boston, they made so many late game mistakes. It just sort of did them in. But let's look at the Eastern Conference, and it's really a five-team conference in terms of teams that are legit contenders, although Brooklyn is kind of sneaky good. But Toronto...
That's a great phrase for them, sneaky good.
They are sneaky good, and they're one trade away from being better than sneaky good. But Toronto is sitting atop the conference. Milwaukee second, Indiana third, Philly fourth, and Boston fifth as we go into Wednesday night's games as we're taping. Out of those five teams, who's the best?
Well, it's so hard. I mean, my gut knee-jerk reaction would be Toronto, just because I'm such a Kawhi fan, Kyle Lowry, obviously. And by the way, that is another area that I think if the Sixers don't get better, is really going to hurt them come April as well, and that is they have gotten torched by other people's backcourts. And it doesn't mean just Toronto. I mean, we can go down the line. Kemba Walker torched them. Mike Conley torched them. Devin Booker torched them. So they better do something defensively with their perimeter before they get to the postseason. But the answer to your question, I would say Toronto. I haven't seen Milwaukee enough. I knew that Budenholzer would make that group better. I'm a big fan of the Greek Freak. So those two, I think it's not an accident that the two of them are up there, but I think Toronto has the edge.
Yeah, Toronto awarded a season sweep by beating Milwaukee this past weekend, but talking with some people at thescore.com earlier today, they're based out of Toronto. They said, man, we're really worried about that Bucks team. And the Bucks are one of the teams that are out there looking for a backup center. Remember, they gave one away. They gave John Henson away in the trade to Cleveland. And Brook Lopez plays on the outside. He's a perimeter player now, and he's banging three-point shots. But they got Thonmaker as their backup center, and there's a couple guys out there who were available. Costa Kufis is one. And then Dwayne Dedmon, who Budenholzer had in Atlanta last year, he may or may not be gettable, but he's a player that certainly the Bucks would try to acquire if they could do it. And another thing with the Bucks to keep in mind is they have to keep cap space available next season because they want to extend Chris Middleton and they want to extend Malcolm Brogdon. But I think certainly right now Mike Budenholzer is right up there with Mike Malone. In terms of who's going to be the coach of the year, and you really can't leave Nick Nurse out of that conversation. But let's take a look at the other side of the picture, Dee, and the Western Conference. Right now, as we go into Wednesday night's games, The Denver Nuggets are sitting in first place at 27-12. They're tied in the loss column with Toronto. The only team with fewer losses is Milwaukee with 11. But the Denver Nuggets are in first place in the Western Conference. And right? You got to kind of chuckle and say, you know, hey, what the heck? What happened? And
if you're going to call Brooklyn sneaky good, then you might want to say that's the sneaky good of the West.
Oh, heck yeah. They got, you know, they've got so many players surrounding Jokic, and Jokic is such a unique player, the only point setter in the league, but they got guys that can shoot it all around him, and they're not stopping. They're not slowing down. They're 16-3 at home. When you look at teams in the West, would you ever have said that this Denver team that finished ninth last year would even be in playoff contention, much less in first place in the West?
Well, I would say contention, but I would have thought like in that 7-8 range. And I will say, Jokic, to me, last year, you started to see, wow, this guy's got something going on. And I think, you know, when they had to trade the other big guy to Portland, that was a very, very smart move by them because you couldn't continue to have both of those guys there. I think it really was taking away from Jokic. So, and obviously Mike Malone, you know, he's been in basketball with his dad being a coach, has been around a lot of good players, good coaches, and it's coming through in his coaching right now, in my opinion.
Right now, Nikola Jokic D is 50-1 to win MVP. 50-1.
Wow.
Right?
50-1. Yes. Well, I mean, I guess the only thing I can say is I hope people who vote have an appreciation for what this guy does. I mean, I love the way he passes the basketball. And, you know, I mean, the guy leads his team in assists with 7.5. So it's been a while. I think I hear a lot. Who was the big guy who played for Portland back in the day? Oh, Sabonis. Arvydas Sabonis. And that there are some similarities to the way he passed the ball and this guy. But, I mean, that's a lot of years in between that, you know, we haven't seen something like this. So I just hope the people who vote understand just what this guy is bringing to the table.
Yeah, the Nuggets don't get enough appreciation on national TV, but the nice thing is the NBA allows its broadcast partners at ESPN and TNT to switch up games. And if this team keeps it up, they're going to get on TV a lot more, and then people are going to develop a bigger appreciation for this kid. I was talking with Igor Kokoskov, who's from Serbia, and he's the coach of the Slovenian national team, and, of course, he's the coach of the Phoenix Suns. And he said, let me tell you something about this kid. He's the nicest kid you've ever met, whether it's ball boys, whether it's training staff, whether it's ushers, security guards. He's got a hug for everybody at every home game.
All the more you'd want to root for the guy, because I love stories like that, that people who treat them, all people, with the same equal, like, enthusiasm, so to speak.
Yeah, and you can't have enough nice guys. There's enough nasty guys around, and you want to have one or two nasty guys on your team because you're going to run into some tough guys on other teams, but it's nice to have good stories as well. I'm going to run through some of the odds on different MVP candidates. But before I do, I want to remind our listeners that this show lives on GetMoreSports.com, but the guys paying the bills are out of Costa Rica. And if you go to MyBookie.com and deposit up to $1,000, and enter bonus code BBALL1000, that's all capital letters, BBALL1000, they'll match your initial deposit up to $1,000, $1,000 US. If you're listening overseas. So that's mybookie.com. And on the board right now, D-Line, there's co-favorites for MVP, Giannis and James Harden. And they are followed by LeBron James, who is 11-2, Steph Curry at 9-1, Kawhi Leonard at 10-1, Anthony Davis, who plays for the 14th best team in the Western Conference, at 11-1. Joel Embiid is 14-1, Kevin Durant is 16-1. And Russell Westbrook is 28-1, and then you start to get to the guys who are 50-1 and under. Of all those names, I guess rolled off. And does anybody jump out at you as like, hey, wait a minute, That's not a bad number.
I mean, obviously, the Joel Embiid, I'd probably hop on that. You said 14-1. His numbers, definitely, you have to say wow a number of times. And I just think before all is said and done at the end of the year, that at 14-1, I'd take my chances.
Yeah, I took my chances at Jokic over the summer. He was at 100-1 over the summer. I put $10 on him. That's what
that's
you call
a good
taking
one.
That's a $10 flyer bet. I like to take flyer bets. And
Chris, by the way, I mean that we spent so much time 2 years ago, like marveling at Russell Westbrook averaging or floating around, averaging a triple double. I mean, this guy is a 19, 10, and 7.5. I mean, he's right there, and he's not bringing the ball up the court.
Yeah, and you know what, though? Paul George is playing so well for that team. I think it's similar to the Golden State situation with Durant and Curry. They're going to kind of split the vote when it comes to people voting for Warriors. And certainly the Warriors are the team to beat, and the certain guys on the Warriors are going to get MVP votes. But when I've voted for MVP in the past, I always look at who's the best player on the best team or the best player on the team that overachieved the most. And so when you look at it that way, probably Giannis right now is the pick, and that's why he's the favorite. But we're only halfway through the season. There's a lot of ball left to be played. There are injuries that are going to happen that we don't know about yet. And I never used to cast my vote until after the 82nd game was played, because I wanted a full body of work to judge him on. And the NBA always used to get on me on that. They're like, hey, where's your ballot? Where's your ballot? You'll have the ballot. The ballot's due at 9 o'clock. I'll have it to you at 8:59. So, Mark Broussard. Mark Broussard always knew my ballot would come in on time. But let's turn to some of the here's odds to win the championship. And I'll skip Golden State because they're at such short odds that you wouldn't even want to lay money on them. But in the Eastern Conference right now, the co-favorites are Boston and Toronto at 7-1, which is really interesting because Milwaukee is at 18-1 and Philadelphia is at 14-1. And then there's the sneaky good Brooklyn Nets that are at 125-1. But in your estimation, why would Toronto and Boston be on the board as co-favorites when Milwaukee is sitting up there at the top and they're at 18-1?
Well, I'm going to say that, similar to what you said about Denver not getting much national attention, I feel the same way about Milwaukee. There's a lot of people who they may know who Giannis is, but they don't really know anything else about that Bucks team. And I don't think they would have an appreciation of what a difference a Budenholzer could do coming from Atlanta to then coaching that group. So I think that would be part of it. The one that I'm pretty surprised at is Boston at this point, because they really haven't been great this year. To me, the only thing I can think of is there's people love Brad Stevens and who his team was defensively in the postseason last year. That has to be the reason that they stay co-favorites with Toronto. But I don't see it, and I don't get how those odds are what they are.
Well, the odds makers try to take money on both sides. You know,
sure. Yep.
The book wants to make money, and and so they'll entice you. They'll entice the Boston bettors with 7-1 odds.
Sure.
But there's teams out there that, you know, Indiana is 60-1. The Indiana Pacers are 60-1 to win the NBA championship, and everybody, I bring so many guests on the show, and then I tell them what the Pacers odds are, and they're like, "What? That's a damn good team," and they got like the same team as last year. The only guy who's missing is Lance Stephenson. And they just keep beating up teams, and you know they got the Sixers number. They always beat the Sixers.
And again, we're talking about a good physical defensive team. The two that I would take a flyer on would be the Bucks, and then if you told me that's 60-1, I mean, for sure you'd do something with Indiana.
Yeah, 60-1 is you can make a little fun bet there, I'll tell you that, because that's a team that's not going away. They match up well with all the good teams in the East. They have a deep bench, and like I said, they got the same team back from last year, and continuity counts for something in the NBA. But then when we look over at the West, right now second on the board is Houston at 10-1, and with the way James Harden's been scoring the ball, they're not a bad pick. Chris Paul is going to come back at a certain point. The Lakers are 18-1, and the Thunder are 22-1, and the Nuggets sitting there at 33-1 right now. And let me tell you, that number has really dropped. Utah is 60-1, and then you know you guys like the Clippers at 80-1. But let's look at the Lakers. The Lakers at 18-1. Question number one: you think the Lakers are going to make a number of trades this season?
I really don't. I mean, I hear you. I see the off season as a big off season for them. But I think that what you're seeing them do, the growth of their young guys, and then, you know, the fact that they have guys like Rondo who, you know, come in on these one-year things to try to just make it work and make them competitive. I think they're okay with being competitive. Now, they may say they want to do more than that, but when you still see the Warriors, who they are right now, you know you're further away than that. And so this is a great year for them to develop those young guys, and I think they've done a good job of that.
I happen to disagree. I think the Lakers are going to shake things up. I think they're going to go hard after Anthony Davis, and I think they have the advantage over Boston in trying to acquire Anthony Davis because Boston can't have Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis on the team together until the summer. And so I think Danny Ainge can pay more than the Lakers can pay, but he can't do that until the summer unless he lets Kyrie Irving go in some sort of a three-team trade. So I think the Lakers are really going to make a hard push sometime between now and February 7th for Anthony Davis. The key to that equation is Anthony Davis somehow getting the word out that, you know what, I want to move on. I want to move on to a better team, and I want to compete for championships year after year after year. The thing with Anthony is he is a very, very loyal guy. He's played for the same high school for 4 years, even when they were terrible. That's the big trade that everybody's looking at and waiting to happen. And the people in Boston are like, no, no, we're going to get him. We're going to get him. And the people in L.A. are like, no, 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 we're going to get him. We're going to get him. And the people in New Orleans are like, well, wait. We want to keep him. So that one bears watching. But when you look at some of the other players that are on the trading block around the league, one guy that's out there who's probably going to get moved in the next day or two is Enes Kanter of the New York Knicks. And talking with a lot of people around the league, they don't like the fact that Enes is a talker. Enes is, you know, he's very active on social media. He's the most popular player in the locker room for the beat writers because he'll talk every night and he'll give good quotes and he'll give honest quotes. But when you look at him, as bad as he is defensively, he adds a lot offensively, especially on the offensive boards. Plus, he can bang with the big guys. If you got to go up against Steven Adams, for instance, in the Western Conference, you need a guy that can bang with that guy. If you're a playoff team, how highly do you value Enes Kanter on an expiring $18 million contract?
Well, the expiring is the big part of it. But if you're someone who's being competitive, I'm not thinking of somebody who jumps to my mind that needs a big like him right now. Me personally, I'm always thinking defense more so than anything because, to me, that rules when the playoffs come around. So unless I know that I'm so solid defensively, and I guess really I don't really look at big men as much as other teams because you're so solid in it with the Sixers with Joel Embiid. I look at people who can compete with him, like Valanciunas totally has Embiid's number every time they've played. So you might have a better idea of Kanter, what he would bring to the table, than I do. I do follow him on social media more to see what he's thinking and, you know, outside of basketball more than basketball stuff. So I do find him interesting in that regard. But again, from a basketball standpoint, Chris, I'm not really sure I know what team would need his skill set. But if you're a team that is looking for getting rid of money for the offseason, that's an easy one I would take in a heartbeat.
Yeah, well, the team that I think he's a perfect fit for is the Brooklyn Nets. They're playing Ed Davis, who's really a power forward at backup
right.
center. I like Jared Allen, but I think they need a second guy. And if they can get him for Kenneth Faried, who's another expiring contract, if I'm Sean Marks, I pull the trigger on that. Of course, you got to get the Knicks to make a trade with the Nets, and those are very rare. I think there's been about only two or three in history. So, Dee, we're going to have to start to wrap here, but I like asking a lot of my guests this question. What's your best gambling story, either one that involves you or one that you've witnessed?
My best gambling, but not on a game, but could it be like at a table?
It could be anything. It's just got to be a great gambling story.
My best gambling story, I was in college, and I flew over because the 76ers had their training camp in Las Vegas, and my dad was the coach back then. And I was of legal age, but I had never played craps because in Atlantic City, I had never done it. So anyhow, I didn't have money. I'm a college student. Charles Barkley spotted me $300. I turned that, made money. I don't remember exactly how much, but I think I doubled it. And I remember buying the most amazing outfit at those Caesar shops with the money that I won.
Yeah. It's, you know, when I gambled in college, I thought $300 was a ton of money. And then,
a ton of money.
Then all of a sudden I got out of college and I realized, no. $300 is a car payment, maybe. It's not going to get you a great car. She's Dee Lynam, and you can follow her on Twitter at Dee Lynam CSN. That's DLYNAMCSN. She's an analyst for the Delaware Bluecoats. She's broadcasting Princeton games. She's been around the Sixers forever. I see her down there every time I take a trip down to Philly. One of the best people that you'll ever meet around the NBA. I want to thank you for being on the show. And I'm wondering when the next time I'm going to see you is, but I think our paths are going to cross at a Sixer game at one point in the near future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. This was fun.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. And with that, we're going to wrap it up. And again, one more plug for the sponsor. This show lives on GetMoreSports.com. But if you go to MyBookie.com and make a $1,000 initial deposit, they will match your initial $1,000 deposit with another $1,000. Then you have $2,000 to go have some fun with. And gambling is no longer illegal in the United States, thanks to the Supreme Court's decision on May 14th. So embrace it, but, don't bet the mortgage, as they say. And with that, Dee, again, thanks for joining us. And we're going to close it up. When we close it up, we say three words: over and out.